Now to our main focus, dissent during war. Can one oppose a war without being disloyal to the nation? How do you remain true to your beliefs and true to your country? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Eric Gustafson. He's a former American soldier opposed to the war in Iraq, one of the co-founders of Veterans for Common Sense, also executive director of EPIC, which stands for the Education for Peace in Iraq Center, and he's with us from his office here in Washington, D.C., and welcome.
Welcome.
You come from a tradition of military service in your family.
That's true. My father, my brothers, uncles, grandparents all served in the military.
And you fought in Desert Storm back in 1991. How did that experience change your mind about war?
Well, I can't say it really changed my mind about war. I'm not a pacifist. I'm not a peace activist. I do think that if there's a national crisis or a clear and present danger, then there are times when we must defend ourselves and go to war. But I do feel that in this case, it's unjustified.
Wrong war, wrong time, wrong place.
Absolutely.
So you're deeply concerned about the possibility, well, more than a possibility at this point, of a war in Iraq?
At this point, I mean, I think it is a foregone conclusion. I think by the end of the week, we will be at war. And I'm deeply concerned about what that means for our men and women in the service right now, as well as what it will mean for the people of Iraq, the humanitarian situation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, no matter how much I disagree with the president's decision, we're all in this together, and there are going to be consequences. And so, you know, I'm looking at what we can do here at home to support the troops, to support our veterans, and also to safeguard civilians and ensure that the humanitarian agencies that have a catastrophe that they will likely have to deal with will be prepared to do their best to support and protect civilians.
So once the conflict begins, though you're opposed to the president's policies, you feel obliged to rally behind the men and women who are going to be carrying those policies out?
Well, I mean, I was in the service myself, and I, you know, it's something that I experienced firsthand. You know, clearly in 1991, when we went to war, and I was with the 864th Engineer Battalion in the U.S. Army, it was very different. There was a U.N. mandate. We had a strong coalition of 30 countries. We felt that we had the strong support of the American people behind us. This time it is different. There isn't a sense of justice this time. You know, people are divided. I think that generally folks are going to rally around our troops, feeling that we need to support them. But at the same time, I think it's important to recognize that we are a democracy, and people like myself are going to continue to question the decision that sends our men and women into harm's way.
But will you continue to protest that decision while combat is underway?
Well, I'm not a protester. I mean,
I
don't go on the street, but I do, you know, EPIC as an organization, I mean, we're going to be doing everything possible. We're launching a humanitarian campaign this week to do the advocacy that's necessary to draw attention to the humanitarian consequences.
Have you come across other people, veterans or not, who are struggling with this same conflict, who perhaps oppose the decision to go to war but want to support U.S. troops?
Yes, and in fact, I mean, Veterans for Common Sense is a new organization, and we've grown dramatically since it was launched. Just last week, we sent a letter to the president. Over 1,000 retired officers and veterans signed on, questioning the need to go to war at this time and expressing concern about, you know, whether the troops will be adequately protected and a number of other concerns.
I wanted to read some emails that we've got. This one from Dan Defoe in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I personally do support Bush, he writes, and the actions being taken. I also support a citizen's right to protest. I am weary of hearing both sides' anger. I have no problems with protest. In fact, I believe it's irresponsible not to follow your morals. Mm-hmm. Keep the protest peaceful, and let's keep the support a little less arrogant. Would you endorse that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important. I think oftentimes we become very polarized, and, you know, the country has become divided over the need to rush to war. I think that that will change some, but others need to act on their conscience. They do have a right to protest the war. I support them, and I support their right to do so. But I also think that it's important not to feel silenced. I think some Americans will feel silenced, even though they might have legitimate concerns and questions about the war. They should not feel silenced. We are a nation. We are all in this together. We need to be in dialogue with each other. And it's a difficult time for us, I think.
You mentioned that the Desert Storm in 1991 was a very different conflict in terms of the coalition assembled in support of it, in terms of a UN resolution and other things. But there were protests against it. When you were over there, were you aware of them? And if so, how did you feel about them?
Well, I was at Fort Lewis, and right outside the gates in Tacoma, there were, I know, a number of demonstrations that I learned of. I have to say, as being in the service, I mean, you know, when you're preparing to deploy, it's not as though you don't have any reservations. We all had reservations. We all wondered whether or not, you know, the diplomatic efforts had been genuine, and whether or not that could have produced some kind of a peaceful resolution. We wondered, you know, what we would face over there. I mean, we were being told that we were facing the fifth largest military in the world, that we would be seeing casualties we hadn't seen since Vietnam. So as a result, when we saw the protest outside the gates, you know, it kind of communicated to us that, yes, there were Americans that were taking this very seriously. And they were against the idea of going to war because, in a sense, they didn't want to see American lives lost needlessly.
Eric Gustafson, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Eric Gustafson is co-founder of Veterans for Common Sense, executive director of EPIC, the Education for Peace in Iraq Center, and he was speaking with us from his office in Washington, D.C. We're talking about dissent during wartime. When we come back, we'll start taking your calls, 800-989-TALK. Later this hour, an expert on international law about the legality of this conflict. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about dissent during wartime. Coming up, we'll consider the growing controversy over the legality of war in Iraq. What do you want to know about international law and military conflict? You can email us at totn@npr.org. We'll answer your questions when we come back later in the program. Again, our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We want to take your calls on dissent during wartime, and our first caller is Elizabeth, who's with us from Whittaker, North Carolina. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi.
There you are. I pushed the wrong button. Elizabeth is with us from Whittaker, North Carolina. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
I am calling because I just wanted to make a couple of statements. The guy just said that we're rushing into war.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that everyone has forgotten about the 17 resolutions over the past 12 years, and I think it's time that we protect our citizens at all costs.
And do you think that demonstrations opposing the president's policies are appropriate once a conflict has begun?
Well, I feel that that's everyone's right, but the way I also feel is that we who agree with the war have the right to protest what is being protested. That's the rights of all persons in a democratic society. So, yes, if that's how they feel, they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I can disagree with them because they're doing that.
But they shouldn't, put aside their differences just because the conflict has begun.
Well, I wouldn't feel right about it because I would be afraid that the troops would take it wrongly, but it's an American right.
Well, thanks very much, Elizabeth.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Joining us now is Tom Andrews. He's the national director of the Win Without War Coalition, also a former congressman from Maine. And good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks so much. It's wonderful to be back.
As a former congressman, I think you can probably understand the difficulties of supporting one's beliefs and supporting the president of the United States. Where do you draw the line in terms of your loyalties at this point?
Well, certainly Americans, and I think that everyone here in our coalition are supporting our troops. We want to make absolutely clear, number one, that every man and woman in uniform going into harm's way has our support. But I think it simultaneously it's very important, we believe, for those in our coalition and others to take a very firm stand in opposition to this unprecedented direction that this country is now taking. We had a real chance to disarm Saddam Hussein without an invasion and multi-year occupation. The very institution that we are snubbing, the United Nations and the Security Council, is the very institution that we will need to address the many problems that can only be addressed multilaterally, starting with international terrorism. Mm-hmm. So this very basic principle of acting in a multilateral way, in a cooperative way, to solve the most difficult problems we're facing is a very important principle to argue for. And whether it mean, you know, terrorism, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, North Korea, mm-hmm. Iran, India, Pakistan, we are the strongest country in the world, but we can't solve these problems without the international community.
You just held a news conference to present what your organization plans to do on opposing the war, which could begin as soon as tonight. What are you going to do?
Well, first of all, we're asking that that everyone who shares our opposition to this invasion and occupation gather at 7 p.m. on the evening when a military attack is launched and light a candle for peace. It's similar to what we did last Sunday evening in 6,800 locations in 140 countries. You know, we'll stand as a united people across this country and across the world to affirm our position. Secondly, we're asking people to join us in supporting the troops, and there are two specific ways that we're asking people to do so. First, by communicating with a man or woman in uniform to let them know that we support them. One of our members of our coalition, a veteran of the Gulf War, talked about how important it was for him in the Gulf War to hear from people at home. And there's a program called Operation Dear Abby in which people can email and write servicemen and women expressing their support of them, and we're encouraging our members to do so. We're also asking our members and others across the country to join us in opposing President Bush's proposal to slash the Veterans Administration budget by billions of dollars. And we're arguing that it's outrageous, really, that we can order, at the same time that we're ordering our men and women in uniform into harm's way, we can simultaneously be cutting the programs and services that they need and that they deserve. Finally, we're going to be releasing on Friday a citizens' declaration that will affirm our commitment to address international conflicts through the rule of law and the United Nations, and pledging our commitment to stopping this first strike doctrine that we now are about to see. And we're going to be circulating it to all of our organizations and their members throughout the United States and throughout the world. And this will be a statement of conscience and a foundation for organizing an action that we hope to promote and mobilize in the coming weeks and months around this fundamental principle.
But this does sound like a change in tactics.
Well, it's not really. I mean, we feel and we have felt all along that the only way that we're going to be successful in the long run is to mobilize public opinion, use the institution of democracies, get people to stand up and be counted in their respective countries, congressional districts, etc. And, you know, you don't always prevail, but the fact of the matter is that in every single nation that is going into this war with the United States, the vast majority of their populations are opposed to this.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel it's very important for their voices to be heard, and for those of us in this country who are opposed to this, we feel it very important for our voices to be heard as well.
Okay.
We don't always prevail, but we think that the issues are so high and so significant that people need to continue to be mobilized.
One of the concerns that many in your coalition have expressed throughout the series of protests has been for the population of Iraq. And many of your speakers would begin their addresses with something along the lines of, yes, Saddam Hussein is a murderous thug, but now that it looks like Saddam Hussein is going to be removed from power relatively quickly, is at least that a side benefit? Or is there a, you know, at least some element of a silver lining in the start of an American-led invasion?
We are, frankly, terrified at the possibilities for catastrophe in Iraq as a result of this invasion. We have heard from United Nations agencies responsible for relief operations that this could be a catastrophe of enormous proportions. One is, has reported publicly that as many as 10, they're predicting 10 million Iraqis will be without food within the first 6 weeks. We're hearing that there could be hundreds and hundreds of thousands of casualties, and we've also heard from these agencies that the United States is not prepared to deal with this enormous problem. We just had a news conference, as you mentioned. One of our members, the American Friends Service Committee, is involved in some of those humanitarian relief efforts, and she's reported to us that the information that is so vital to be able to carry out these relief operations is not forthcoming from the Defense Department, which is doing much of the coordination of this phase. And she says that this is it is frustrating the efforts of those to prepare to meet this this catastrophe. So we're very concerned about this, and we're doing everything we can to make it clear that this will be a fundamental responsibility of the United States to address these enormous problems that that could be unleashed in the next few days and weeks.
So, in a way, though, Saddam Hussein has been accused of killing as many of a million of his own citizens. You would have left him in power?
No. There are, if you listen to the deliberations of the United Nations Security Council and you listen to those that were charged with responsibility for implementing the resolutions of the Security Council, they were very clear that unprecedented progress was being made. Proactive cooperation had been achieved to the extent to which they felt that this, the completion of their mission of identifying and destroying weapons of mass destruction were at hand, and the identification of any capacity for nuclear weapons and the destruction of that capability was at hand. In other words, we were fully able to disarm and contain Saddam Hussein. And then, of course, there are...
But that would have done nothing to protect his citizens.
Let me finish. Then there are other legitimate ways that we could use the United Nations institutions to prosecute Saddam Hussein as a war criminal, for example, as we've done, for example, in Rwanda or with Milosevic, in which we could take away his capacity to inflict injury on his people. But again, these are ways that are using existing institutions through the United Nations that was created to advance the rule of law as opposed to the rule of war. And in violating that principle, we think, is a very serious mistake.
Tom Andrews, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Tom Andrews is the National Director of the Win Without War Coalition, and he was with us from his office in Washington, D.C. Joining us now is Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, who's in his office here in Washington, Republican representative from California. And it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you very much, especially after listening to Tom. When people listen to this, it would scare anyone from taking any action against any tyrant at any time in history. Adolf Hitler, Joe Stalin, you name it. Milosevic, the guy he just quoted, would still be in power if we'd followed this man's and a lot of people like him. They're just frightened approach and I might say somewhat paranoid approach to trying to make this a better world.
We're talking about the issue of dissent and protest during wartime. Does the start of a conflict change things?
Well, I think let me put it this way. All these people have been calling for us to declare war before we conduct any military operations should know that when you declare war, you're actually also saying that there's going to be some diminishing of civil liberties. That's why some of us, meaning myself and others, while we're supporting getting rid of Saddam Hussein, we did not say we have to declare war. Legally, I don't think anyone's rights should be diminished, but I think that if people are patriotic and are being somewhat concerned about our own military men, that in the next few days they should try to calm down and quiet down a bit instead of giving Saddam Hussein a false hope that there's some people here who are going to save him.
Let me read you an email we got from Matt Neff in Coon Rapids, Minnesota. As someone with family members serving in the armed forces and stationed in the Middle East, I find it very hurtful for my support for our troops and my patriotism to be questioned when I voice my criticism to the president and his diplomatic capabilities. We all are hoping and praying for a safe return of our soldiers.
Well, I think that that's true with the vast majority of people who are worried about the war. I'm sure Tom, who was just on, is a very patriotic person and loves other people. But that doesn't mean that when our troops start fighting, that someone who has some disagreement doesn't try to take into consideration that his or her words could elongate the conflict, could prevent the Saddam Husseins of the world from surrendering, or could hinder some people from joining our side, thinking that maybe America is divided. So I'm not saying they can't say it. I'm certainly there should be no legal ramifications. And I'm not even questioning people's patriotism, but people who are patriotic should think twice and lower their voices now that we're in combat.
We're speaking with Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, Republican of California. The issue is dissent during time of war. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to a phone call, and Simone joins us on the line from Philadelphia.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling. I had originally called just to say this one comment, and then so much of what's been said since brings up lots of feelings and thoughts. But I'll start with that first comment, which is, I think that the act of protest for anyone to claim that it is not supporting our troops has an absurdness, because asking that our troops come home and out of harm's way is the ultimate act of support. And it says to the men and women, I wanted to say to the congressman who only spoke of the men, because mm-hmm. at this point in our history, there are women in harm's way in this war as well, and I think that needs to be said. But the men and women, that what we're saying to them is, your human life is valuable to us as people. And that we aren't saying to them, that you, the soldier, is responsible for this war. We know who, both on both sides, have brought us to war. It isn't the men and women fighting, and it isn't the men and women in the streets of Iraq. It's the people in control and the leaders.
Well, Simone,
there's no doubt about that, and I think that her point is very well taken. When I said the soldiers, and I, like a lot of other people, we have to, men and women in our society who mistakenly say our soldiers, the men who are doing that. That was a point well taken. We got to get out of that habit of just saying the men, because it is the men and the women in our military who are putting their lives on the line.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
So that's a very valid point. In terms of your second point, if we are concerned about them and are concerned about their lives, once fighting does start, especially like what we're expecting over a week or two-week period in Iraq, the same type of dissent and vocal dissent may have ramifications on the safety of our troops. And I don't believe that people should be denied their right to speak, but I do believe if you are patriotic and are concerned about these people, that you should take that into consideration, that it might convince Saddam Hussein or his people to fight on more and would cost the lives of some of our people.
May I respond?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to say that was the point, sir, that you had made that brought up a lot of feelings for me, because I think that as a nation, if we want to lead by example, then we need, in fact, to lead by example. And that if we are saying that what we believe in is democracy and what we support is freedom for people, then while I hear your interpretation of what might happen, what I believe happens is that other countries are more likely to join us if they believe that we actually walk the walk and don't just talk the talk.
Well, no one's suggesting that there should be that's why I didn't. That's why I wouldn't have voted for a declaration of war or you can't do anything type of strategy, because I do believe that people certainly have the right to protest, but when you're talking about measuring someone's patriotism or not, you have to measure that by whether or not they are willing to do things that put at risk our people because of other perhaps strongly felt convictions that are not just based on patriotism, but are based on other moral considerations, perhaps.
Well, and while I understand that, I think that patriotism is not as a unthought about act is very close to nationalism, and nationalism in Germany is what brought us Hitler, and I have my doubts. I actually believe that fascism could happen in this country.
Well, now you don't believe in patriotism. In the beginning of the conversation, I thought you were talking that no one's patriotism should be questioned, and now you're saying that patriotism brings about Adolf Hitler.
No, I didn't say that. I said that if you don't think about what it means, if you act without thinking and you act without if you simply say, oh, I have to silence myself now in order to support someone, and you go blindly towards a belief, then you end up in extremes. And we as a country value a lack of extremes.
Yeah,
we value that every person has a right.
Simone, why don't we give the congressman the last 10 seconds?
Well, obviously, no, I'm not suggesting anyone blindly do anything. I think that there's been a lot of thought given on this issue. Our president has strung this out for months and months so we could have a long debate and people overseas could debate. And the right thing to do is to get rid of this monster, Saddam Hussein, for our own security and for the people in Iraq who are being oppressed.
Congressman, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you. And Simone, thank you for your call. And we're going to be back after a short break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about dissent during time of war. In a few minutes, we're going to switch subjects and talk about the issue of the legality of the conflict that could begin as soon as tonight. If you have questions about that or comments, give us a phone call at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org, but we wanted to finish up on the dissent in wartime issue. Last week, we invited emailers to send us famous quotes that seemed particularly relevant now. John Farquhar sent us this quote from Theodore Roosevelt. The president is merely the most important among a large number of public servants. He should be supported or opposed exactly to the degree which is warranted by his good conduct or bad conduct, his efficiency or inefficiency in rendering loyal, able, and disinterested service to the nation as a whole. To announce that there must be no criticism of the president or that we are to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but morally treasonable to the American public. Nothing but the truth should be spoken about him or anyone else. But it is even more important to tell the truth, pleasant or unpleasant, about him than about anyone else. A quote from then-former President Theodore Roosevelt from 1918 in the final months of the First World War. Our topic is protesting war during wartime. Our next caller is Nassim, who joins us from Silverton, Oregon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I really have to take issue with the congressman's comments earlier where he said that protests could actually elongate a war. When you look back to the Vietnam War, what would have happened? How much longer would we have been in battle? How many more thousands of lives would have been lost if it weren't for thousands of people taking to the street and saying no?
Were you among those protesters?
No, I was probably just 9, and I wasn't among them. I remember thinking, why are we killing gorillas? And they were thinking they were just animals. I didn't understand what war meant, and I would hope that children in the future wouldn't have to as well.
Would you think that among the things the people were fighting for, in the case of Vietnam, largely the men and now men and women, would be for the freedom of people to protest?
You're asking me, were the protesters saying that they should, that they would?
No, I'm asking you whether one of the rights that the men and women in Vietnam and perhaps as soon as tonight in Iraq are fighting for is the freedom to protest.
I think that the freedom to express oneself is an essential element of democracy, and that people who do protest, that do express themselves, are living up to the words of the Constitution. They're living up to the beliefs of our founding fathers.
Let me read you this email we got from Ellen Kempf. As the parent of a Marine, she wrote, I am deeply concerned that the protesters don't realize the effect their demonstrations can have on our soldiers. These young men and women are risking their lives for you. Protest if you wish, but at this time understand your actions are demoralizing. It's impossible to say you support the troops but do not support the policy.
And I would hope that's not true. I would hope that troops would understand that by saying we want peace, we're saying we want you whole, and we want you whole back at home with your families here.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Steve, and Steve's with us from Livermore, Maine.
Hi. I feel that dissent when the war has started is not appropriate. And to all those who do dissent, I cannot understand how they can ignore Halabja, the gas attack on women and children, fathers and sons. We have the proof, we have the pictures. And so many other things that Saddam Hussein and his cohorts have done. They're in extreme danger, not directly to us, but the world together is right 1930 was right to go and help in Spain. Kosovo and Serbia, we waited. Rwanda, we did nothing. Dissent is appropriate. I can understand it. But they seem to overlook so much that should not be overlooked. The world must contend with these things, and we have to start somewhere. Iraq is a good place to start.
Let me clarify, Steve. Do you think that protest is inappropriate, but within the rights provided under the Constitution, freedom of speech?
That's true. I understand that. I just think that those that are dissenting are overlooking so much that should not be overlooked. And God help us, North Korea is being overlooked, and God knows where that will lead. Going into Iraq, the war is right. The dissent is wrong now that the war is going to start.
Steve, thanks.
When I say wrong, I mean it doesn't make sense. It's trying to deal rationally with an irrational regime, a country, a danger, a horror.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there, Steve. Thanks very much for the phone call.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.